Hello and welcome to the PlanetIRL.com podcast. I am your host, as always, Cole Kirkland, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Paul Dalby. And this week we're also joined by Jeremy Scott, and our special guest host this week is Dan Clark. How are you guys today?
Good, good.
Doing great.
Okay. So we're just going to launch right into a Motegi review of the Motegi race. From Japan, what were your guys' initial thoughts from the race and from the win of, was it Hickson? Yes, and Briscoe's crash. What were your main thoughts on the race? We'll start with you, Dan.
I think it was a good race. I was obviously frustrated for Ryan because he was driving a solid, solid performance really up to that point. But I have to say that, overall, I think it's a great point for the series right now. There's a lot of, news going every which way, really. But I think one thing that no one can deny is the championship battle that's taking place right now. But going into the last race, unfortunately for Ryan, but I think it just, everything worked out to put on for really is what's going to be a great finale.
Mm-hmm. And you, Paul?
I think it's basically what we've come to expect from Motegi. It's a mile and a half, but it doesn't race like the rest of the mile and a half. It's more like, what Gateway used to look like, or, with the egg-shaped track. I would say this race really pretty much played out according to script, what everyone would have thought, except for Briscoe running over the witch's hat and taking himself out when he had a chance to pretty much, if not lock up the championship, but to at least make it to where he just needed to show up at Miami. And now we have a real battle coming along.
And Jeremy?
Well, obviously, it was interesting. First of all, seeing Danica Patrick use half of her push to pass within the first, 40 laps?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the pressure was on her to repeat her win. And, I think maybe if she would have used her head, saved those push-to-passes, I think she may have won the race. To see Briscoe spin and crash, I don't know if he meant to do that to make a chase, but it does suck for Briscoe because, he could have, and like we said, he could have locked up this championship. This is going to be an interesting last race. Motegi's always a wrench in the equation. Doesn't matter if it's the beginning of the season or the end of the season, as we have seen.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to do a post about this, and I didn't get around to it, but I think this week at Motegi is the best race by far that we've ever seen at Motegi. There was a lot more... It wasn't just follow the leader as usual. There was passing, and there was passing for the lead, and you had Briscoe's incident. There was just a total... more action going on than what we usually see at Motegi. So moving into Homestead, who are you taking for the championship, Paul?
Well, I think you still have to give the edge to Briscoe. Briscoe's won the last 2 mile and a half ovals at Kentucky and Chicago. He dominated at Texas. He just has a fantastic car set up team to run the mile and a half. And, Dixon has shown well there as well this year. But I just think with the winner take all, I think that the Briscoe and Team Penske have just seemed to have a little bit better car on the mile and a half this year. We saw that the second half at Chicago, really at Kentucky as well, where when push came to shove, the Ganassi cars just didn't have the speed to make it happen. If Dixon was to the point where he had led the most laps during the race and that 10-point cushion between first and second gets us to at least a tie, because Dixon has all the tiebreakers and he wins, if that comes to pass, then, you have to look at Dixon if he gets those 2 points. But if Castro Neves even goes out and becomes the rabbit and takes those 2 points away, I don't see any way that Dixon or that Briscoe doesn't win this championship. Unless he runs over the pit cone again.
And Dan, as a driver, what is it like in a championship battle like this with only 8 points separating the top three? What is it? What goes to the driver's mind in a final race like this?
I think it depends on what position you're in. You know, it always happens to somebody getting to this point of the season in every series, really. And you start thinking about not just, you know, winning the championship, but just thinking about what it is you have to do, really, instead of just going out and thinking about winning the race. For a lot of people, when they get to this time of the season, they think just how many points they need just to get the job done, really, because, you know, nobody wants to look like the guy that was going all out for a win if it wasn't necessary and then made a mistake. But this obviously is a completely separate situation scenario right now because somebody does have to go out for the win. And it's interesting though because being a driver looking and trying to analyze each driver, you know, you've got three world-class drivers there right now, and I don't think you could really put one of them ahead of the other. I think it's interesting that Briscoe is up ahead, up against Franchitti and Dixon. Both guys have proven themselves when it comes down to the wire. But I agree with Paul. I think if you were going into the last race now and you needed to win, I think the best car you'd want to be in, what's proven this year, is Penske. And you know, Ryan's not proven himself like Franchitti and Dixon have when it comes to this time of the year, but also Ryan's not been in this position before, and you know, he could easily make this his night and his year.
Jeremy, who is your pick for the championship this year?
Well, I'm going to have to say it's going to be Ryan Briscoe, because, you know, he's really proven himself this year that he's mature. He knows that, you know, if he can't win a race, he knows to bring it home in a really good position. And he's done that a lot in the second half of the season. And unfortunately, the pit cone kind of got in the way of him, or he got in the way of the pit cone at Motegi, so that kind of hurt his chances. But I think Ryan Briscoe will use a cool head and Olmsted, think about, okay, where can, you know, find out where he has to finish, and I think he'll stay around there and not really contend for the win.
It, with only 8 points separating the championship, this is what we wait all year for, and this is what draws a lot of people to IndyCar, I think, is that over the last, what, 5-10 years, it's always been this close or pretty close to that, with only 8 points and 3 points separating the top two. So I think this is a positive note for the series, and although the three drivers involved aren't mega popular and they're not known by everyone that are just casual fans like an Elio or Danica, I think this will help the series. But again, Penske and Ganassi yet again show that they are the top two teams, and I think that is really hurting the series. Do you guys think that the Penske-Ganassi domination has taken over the season?
Yeah, I think it has, because, you know, what? How many people want to sit and watch, you know, two teams duke it out for the win? And Danimal, I'm going to see if you agree on this or not, but take a look at the Sebastian Bourdais domination days of Champ Car. That, I mean, Dan, do you feel that in itself kind of was part of the reason?
It's a good point. I mean, it's like Schumacher and Ferrari as well. But I think the Bourdais situation at Champ Car is a lot more like the Schumacher situation at Ferrari. And I think everybody, even though they didn't want to agree, was best all-rounder driver in the Champ Car field at the time. And yeah, that car was pretty good, and everyone knew the Newman Haas car was good. And people would like to talk and spread rumors that, you know, they had this and this on the car, and his was the one car that sounded different in the turns to everyone else's, like something funny was going on. But No, I think everyone looks back now and thinks that Sebastian Bourdais was doing the best job, really. No one else really had that kind of consistency going besides maybe Paul Tracy, that relationship with the team. And, you know, he had that as soon as he came across after I think it was 3,000 with Newman Haas.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting to note, yeah, that if, just going back to Homestead, if Briscoe doesn't go out to win the race, you know, who else is going to win it? It's going to be, you know, more than likely it's going to be a Ganassi car if he's not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes for a good finale. You know, even though I agree it's maybe doesn't show, maybe there's not as much variety in the winners in the series this year, but when it comes to a finale, it actually just, you know, it gives it that much more tension because you know one of those three cars is going to win, really.
And Homestead has never really been an exciting track, per se, not as good as what used to be the finales with Chicago and Texas, and I think that is going to hurt a bit too, because people are going to tune in and see Follow the Leader to figure out the championship, and we will ultimately go into the fuel mileage race to see who's going to win the entire championship, and I think that's just wrong. Take it back to Chicago or Texas and let them fight it out on a good track where the driver matters and it's not just the fuel engineer doing the work.
Homestead has had some races. I think back to 2006 when Weldon first showed up at Ganassi, where, you know, they Weldon and Castroneves were pretty close all the way down to the finish. In fact, it was one of the closest finishes in the series history. So Homestead has the capability. It just doesn't race as a wheel-to-wheel track like the D-shaped ovals. But I don't think you're going to see either of the cars run away from each other. You know, if the Ganassi guys get out front, they're going to run nose-tail and try to work it out between themselves at the end. But I don't expect it to be like what was it, 2007 race or whatever, where Dan Weldon almost lapped the field. I think it'll be a close race all the way down to the end, I think.
Mm-hmm. And really, if one person wins out of the top three, they will be the champion no matter where anyone else finishes, I believe, because I think it's...
Unless Dixon... Briscoe can still lose it if he wins. Briscoe can lose if he wins if Dixon gets the two extra points for leading the most laps.
Mm-hmm. It's all math, and I don't do math.
Well, the only way that Briscoe can lose the championship if he wins the race is if he does not score any points and Dixon finishes second and leads the most laps.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I think it's good for the championship that we are close and that the winner is going to take all, but think back to last year when we fought this out at Chicago where it came down to the final corner. That made it exciting. That got us on SportsCenter, and that's what people want to see. So maybe maybe moving Homestead to the end next to the NASCAR date like they're doing is not such a good plan. Go ahead, Dan.
Sorry, I had to interrupt, actually. Well, I think it's a good point to make, really, because it's an important point right now, you know. You know, it affects people like myself. Because, you know, I'm not in a race car this year either in the IndyCar series. But it's also affecting a lot of teams right now, the same topic that comes up about, you know, does everybody, you know, there's only, really, I think, how many races is it now? Does anyone know the number of how many of the last IndyCar oval races have been won by Ganassi, Penske, or AGR?
You've
got to go back to Kentucky in 05, I think.
The last non-Big 3 win was at Kentucky 05 by Scott Sharp.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's something like a minimum of 45 races, isn't it? Is it 46 or 47?
Something in that number, yeah.
Yeah, it's high.
But, you know, my point is not that I'm bashing IndyCar at all. I think those people realize that, and it's a difficult subject to tackle, you know, especially with the economy, and if you want to introduce a new car and level out the playing field like Champ Car did in 2007, then, you know, that's a lot of money for people to spend. But I only make the point because I know there's a lot of talent in the rest of that field, and I think, you know, the fans are missing out on that too. And not only are people's reputations perhaps being harmed, but particularly some of the teams. I mean, I know there are people at HVM very well, and it's still the same group of experts that, you know, have won races in Champ Car in all years, really, that I've known them. And, you know, those guys, are, don't want to talk about the results they've been having lately on ovals, but, you know, they don't deserve to be where they are. They deserve to be higher up. And, you know, it excites me to think that someday, you know, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be guys like that that can put their minds to it and come with the right attitude and, you know, have a shot and, be, you know, be within a chance of winning a race on an oval.
I think we've seen, though, this year that it can be done. If you look at the results that KV has had and you look at the advancements that Newman Haas has had, no, they haven't won a race, but, you know, you look at where Graham Rahal was this year and you look at where Mario Marais was this year. Now, that's a little bit different since he came from Coyne. But, I mean, just look at Mario Marais from the start of the year to where he is now. I mean, you can see not only his personal growth, but the growth of that team. And, you know, probably not at Miami, but if Miami comes around 2010 and Newman Haas and or KB hasn't won an oval race, I would be floored. You know, they're still playing a bit of catch-up. I mean, they have 2 years while the Penske's and Ganassi's have 7 years in these cars. It's just a matter of time. They will catch up. And like I said, if they don't win next year, I would be shocked.
Well, I think one thing that's going to help Newman Haas win an oval race next season is, well, and this is if they keep Oriel Servia next year. And it is the addition of Oriel Servia. Take a look at how Graham Rahal did at Motegi with the addition of Oriel Servia.
Mm-hmm. Oriel Servia just has that, that Brian Herta sort of mentality to him, that he is willing to put his nose to the grindstone and really get things done for the team and do what it takes to get the team good as a whole. Dan, are you really familiar with Oriel?
Yeah, I've raced against him, and, you know, I actually saw him in Chicago Land too, and he's a good guy, and, you know, I raced against him. He's a tough guy to race against. You know, he was always a good guy to battle with. But yeah, I have to admire the way that he's gone about this year and the role that he played at AGR before he got his opportunity to race. And, you know, also remember that he was doing an excellent job in the 500 as well before technical problems ended his race. So yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how old he is, but, you know, he's definitely using his experience and he's definitely getting the job done.
I don't think if Oriel Servia doesn't show up at AGR or at Newman Haas this year, I don't think you see you don't see the advancement in Graham this year either that you've seen. The difference between Graham with Robert Dornbos as a teammate and Graham with Oriel Servia as a teammate is night and day. You know, I think like Dan said, he's a quality racer who knows what needs to happen. He knows what a car needs to feel like, and he knows what a team needs to do to prepare it. So every time he goes out there, he's helping Graham learn. He's helping the team learn. And, you know, if I'm an owner in 2010, Oriel Servia is on the top of my list of candidates to be driving my car.
Well, not only that, guys, but you also have to stop and figure. This isn't Oriel Servia's first stint with Newman Haas Lanigan. He did fill in for Bruno Junqueira when he had that nasty crash at the Indy 500 in 05.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I have a feeling that also some team familiarity is also helping Oriel Servia out. But if Newman Haas Lanigan does not sign Oriel Servia next season, I will be highly surprised.
Well, I think there's another person that's in the running for that NHL seat, so I wouldn't cross your fingers on seeing Servia back particularly. But we've been talking about drivers and seats. Do you see any Indy Lights drivers moving up next year at all? I mean, J.R. Hildebrand won the championship when he dominated this year, but so did Alex Lloyd. Look where he is now. So, Dan, do you see any of the Indy Lights guys moving up in the IndyCar?
not glad that you asked me that question, because I agree, I've seen a lot of good guys, and guys do well in Indy Lights, and they've never really, you know, they've not often been given a good chance in IndyCar, really, and that's sad, and, you know, I'm sure IndyCar are concerned about that, too. About Hildebrand, I think he's, you know, he's done the absolute best job he could have done, really. He was doing well at Atlantics, and he was doing well, he did well last year in his first year of Lights, and I also raced against him this year in the A1GP series at Brands Hatch in May, and he did a great job there as well. So I think if you're a team, you know, a lot like looking at someone like Servia and seeing that he does a proper professional job, Servia does bring some experience, but for somebody young, I think Hildebrand's definitely got all the right characteristics there.
Yeah, we see a lot of these guys from Indy Lights. You know, Jonathan Summerton still amazes me that he doesn't have a ride in any top-level series, even though it looks like he's the top candidate for USF1. Jeremy, who do you think has the best chance of moving up from Indy Lights?
Well, I'd like to say J.R. Hildebrand, but, you know, in this day and age, it's not like it used to be where the winner of a support series automatically gets a bid for the main series. And I'd like to see J.R. Hildebrand moved up. I'd like to see Hinch move up. There's just a list of drivers that I think would be a great addition to the IRL. Bea, you give her maybe 1 or 2 years, and I think she will be ready for the IndyCar series. But my top two drivers I would like to see are J.R. Hildebrand and Hinchcliffe.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, our friend of the show, Daniel Harrington, I've heard rumblings of Brian Herta maybe moving his team up to IndyCar next year, so he might get lucky there to get Brian and Daniel up. But, of course, the market is really flooded right now, not just with Indy Lights, but also people from Champ Car like Dan Clark or Sebastian Bourdais or even Paul Tracy. And we have competition from Brazil and England and all over the world. So it's not an easy time right now to be looking for a ride in IndyCar. So maybe we need to change the way we bring our talents in, but I don't think it's going to happen.
What other way do you think it could happen?
Well, last week on the show, we discussed maybe franchising or drafting drivers, doing a draft at the beginning of every season to pick drivers like they do with American football.
Well, also, excuse me, sorry. You know, and the only way we're going to see drivers come in, I'm going to take Sebastian Bourdais for an example, that's if McDonald's can have the money and say, I want him back in Newman-Haas Land again, because, you know, take a look at it. He won in Super League Formula.
Mm-hmm.
In his first time out.
He dominated his first race over there. So we all know Bourdais has the talent. Here I go on a Bourdais tangent, and all of you will love that again. But we know he has the talent, but we know Dan Clark has the talent. We know Paul Tracy, as much as I hate to admit it, has the talent. But it's not about that anymore, and that's sad. It's about who can bring the biggest paycheck. Why else would Milka Duno have a full-time ride? It's pitiful.
It is, and when is it going to end? When can it end? Unfortunately, I think it's going to be probably 10 years until we see sponsors ponying up the money to bring in drivers that they want, or unless we see Mazda come into the IndyCar series and say, all right, we're going to have the Mazda Motorsports development program like we have in sports car racing. I think that is probably the greatest idea that anyone's ever come up with.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like Atlantics used to do the $1 million scholarship to the champion of that series, you know, try that. Do something to get the Indy Lights relevant again.
Yeah, because you see guys like Cunningham, Lloyd, Mark Taylor, former champions who, you know, they may have gotten a shot in IndyCar series, but they didn't get a proper shot. Let's give these guys a top-flight ride.
Mm-hmm. Dan, what is what is it that a driver has to do to get in the series now?
You're asking the wrong person because I'm not in it.
What is the problem that's holding you back besides, of course, the sponsorship? Is there something else that's holding all these drivers back? I mean,
I don't know if I want to kill people's enthusiasm and passion for motor racing with what my answer would be, but I talk to the teams and they're just hurting for cash, you know. They can't pull money out of thin air, and you know, it's a sad thing to say, and you know, it can really get you down. If, even for me being a racing car driver, you know, I've loved motor racing since I was 8 years old and I saw my first ever Grand Prix. And you know, I obviously have immense passion for what I do, but it really does get you down sometimes because, you know, people just, you know, they don't know how to make it happen. They don't know what it is you can do to make it happen. And, you know, you end up chasing down a lot of rabbit holes trying to find this budget to go racing with. And, you know, the positive this year is that I was really impressed with the Versus coverage of the races. You know, I think they did an excellent job. I feel like from a driver point of view and a, you know, technical point of view, there was a lot of features they did in the programming, and there was a lot of detail, things that really made differences to races that they got hold of. And, you know, it's been a long time since I've felt that those things were captured. So I was disappointed to read the news about TV ratings because, you know, as Paul Tracy came out and said as well, it makes your life even harder when you're trying to justify it to sponsors, say, hey, why don't you come and spend a few million dollars with me and we'll go racing? And they're like, well, how many people watch this race? And you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets hard to justify because, you know, I'm a nice guy and I'm sure that's what people say too. And, you know, you don't want to rob people, but at the same time you want to go racing and, you know, trying to get it to happen. It's tough.
So does a driver have to bring a major sponsor with him to be on team these years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what happens, you know. You call up and you go see the teams and you say what's up, and they say what's going on. And when they say what's going on, they mean you got any money yet.
Yeah, and it's really sad because there are so many drivers out there that deserve to be here, and there are a handful of drivers that I think don't deserve right now to be in the IndyCar series or whatever ride they are. But there really is no feasible way around that at this point, so I don't think we're gonna get out of it.
Well, I think the new engine suggestions that people, you know, that have been passed around and ideas about how to introduce new formats for engines that can encourage more manufacturers, and, you know, they need that kind of color in that you can add to the racing. And, you know, I think I've said this before, I think, on the show, and, you know, if people are able to start producing, different people can start producing race cars and go racing with them. I think, you know, I think that's going to unite, like, the American kind of culture, and it's going to bring that, make that Indy 500 even bigger if people are almost, you know, building stuff from smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. And there's that extra variety.
And along those lines, we have been hearing about the new engine and chassis formula for 2012 for months now, and they still have yet to release any specs or any news or anything about it. I mean, it's not easy to design and produce an entire fleet of engines or chassis, so I think if the league wants these out by 2012, they better get on the ball here.
Well, not only that, but they also have to get on the ball telling us what manufacturers are involved. I've heard, let's see, Alfa Romeo, Honda, Volkswagen, and Fiat, I believe, are the four manufacturers that claim to be on board with this. We're getting dangerously close to the point of no return for development for this engine. So will it happen 2012? We'll see.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think a change like that will really hurt, or not hurt, but it'll hurt if we don't get it, because I think, as Dan said, the variety really helped. It made someone be loyal to this. You know, you're a Honda guy, so you cheer for the Honda teams. And it's more than just the discrepancy in the speeds of the racing. It's the mental part of it, too. So I think that'll help a lot. So, are there any other topics you guys would like to cover?
None that I could think of. I mean, if you want to touch upon the Homestead test, we can do that. I have the page. I have the IndyCar page up right now, talking a little bit about it.
There was a test at Homestead this week. I think. Did you say Vitor Mir was there driving?
Awesome. Oh, next week. I'm sorry.
Next week.
Yeah, next week, Vitor Mir will be back in a car for the first time since his Indianapolis 500 crash. The first test will take place at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's great to see Vitor back in the car. I did get a chance to see him at Mid-Ohio, and he looked great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got to applaud the IndyCar safety crew. They got to that car fast, and that is the main reason, one of the main reasons why Vitor's recovery was so fast. And, you know, also kudos to the track doctors and over at Methodist Hospital. We've come a long way with driver injuries, and hopefully Will Power will be back in a car very soon himself, and Nelson Philippe, you know, three great drivers that unfortunately just caught the bad end of racing this season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll see how Vitor does during this test. You know, it'd be kind of interesting.
And the thing I'm wondering is, how did they get a test? I thought there was a ban on in-season testing, especially in Indianapolis. Is this like a tire test?
I can imagine it's a tire test.
Because I think they're just limited testing, and especially for someone like AJ Foyt, who I don't think he really has a budget to be testing at two tracks within a week. So how does that work?
You know, I'm reading the article here, and it says that he will be just testing at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but Mira is just, you know, Foyt's giving Mira some seat time. Here's a quote from AJ Foyt. We're not going for any track records. I just want to give him some seat time so he can adjust to being back in a race car after being out for so long. And that's a smart thing to do. Acclimate him before next season, so when he gets to spring training at Sebring and Homestead, he's not, you know, unfamiliar with the car. Because, you know, that's almost a year for him being out.
Dan, have you ever had an injury like that where you've been out for a long period of time?
No, touch wood, I haven't actually. I think the worst crash I ever had, I actually posted on Twitter this week.
I saw that,
YouTube. That was 2003. I think I crashed about 115 miles an hour into that barrier, but my only injuries were 24-hour nausea the next day, where I couldn't lift my head to get out of bed, and I just stayed in bed, so I was going to throw up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was concussion or not, but didn't actually go to the hospital other than that.
Oh, wow, so...
Now, that was in a British Formula Ford, correct?
Yeah, that was actually for Comtech Racing, who came from the famous Van Diemen Works team. So it was the famous yellow and blue Duckham's car.
Yeah, I saw that crash. Well, how is it, I'm sure you've not injuries, but over off season, what is it like to be back in a car again like that? He's been out for 4 or 5 months now. What are the hardships of getting back in a car? Is it the physical strain or is it the mental strain?
It's a good question, actually. I'm glad you asked that because that's what I faced this year when I did my races in the M1 GP Series. You know, it had literally been 14 months since I'd been in a race car. And I have to admit, I was a little bit anxious to find out what was going to happen the minute I got in the car. But the biggest thing I think you do notice is that you're kind of your depth perception at speed. You don't, you know, it's hard to keep that honed, really. And so sometimes you can kind of get a bit confused. And yeah, but what happens once you're just back in the car for a little while, it starts coming at you at a slower pace again. And I think that's what your edge kind of is. You know, you're, as far as skills for feeling the car, that doesn't go away. But your brain kind of slows down a bit, if that makes sense, when you stop going at 200 miles an hour on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was Ayrton Senna who said something along the lines of, you never really forget how to drive a race car, but your body just isn't used to the strain and the forces involved.
Yeah, that's probably true. Cause, you know, the one thing that happens to people when they jump in two-seater rides a lot, especially the Minardi F1 stuff that Paul Stoddart had going on with the jump cars in 2007 was a lot of people would, especially women who were not, you know, as physical, they would end up being really sick and their organs get, you know, literally sloshed about a lot more than a full-time race car drivers do.
Mm-hmm. And I know that'll scare Lise off, who's probably listening to this. She's going to be in the IndyCar two-seater at Homestead, so way to scare her away with that.
Normally most people jump out completely fully adrenalized and they want to go again because they love it. It is a, you know, that's why race car drivers are hooked on it as well, because it is super addictive and fun. She'll enjoy it, I'm sure.
I do want to try it at Indy here in a couple of years when it's actually legal for me to do it, so that is something on my list to try one of the two-seaters. So I think that's just about all of the news of the week. Unless there's anything else you guys want to cover, we'll just go ahead and back on out.
Yeah, I gotta jump in. Actually, starting to pack up here in the media center.
I had one point I was gonna make actually, which talking about rookies, new guys, and you know, guys moving up, and you know, people wanting to see rookies do well. We're talking about going into Homestead, and these three guys are gonna be fighting out for the championship, but. Also, with the talking about the teams that haven't won races yet, I think it'd be really interesting, and I think it's quite possible we could see ourselves. You know, we've got three guys that have got, one of them's got to win the race, right, to win the championship. But I think you've got, you know, Mario Moraes could well be in the thick of that. And you know, if he's anything like, you know, a race car driver, which he is obviously, you know, he's going to be wanting to get his first win as well. And I think that I'd be interested to see him getting in the middle of that. But fighting out for his first win.
I think Moraes will get that first win, if not at Homestead early next year, because he's really progressed along. So,
that's going to do it for me. I got to go.
Well, Jeremy has to go. He's up at Road America doing the SECA runoff, so he'll be doing a little coverage of that for us.
Yeah, go ahead and check out GoRacingTV.com. We're having daily news update shows.
Okay, so check that out, and he'll be posting some of those on our site.
Anyone who's in Indy this weekend, there's going to be a Soapbox Derby competition on Saturday morning. I'm going to go down there. It's with the Carmel Dads Club. It's going to be at, Wilbershaw Memorial Soapbox Derby Hill on 30th and Cold Spring in Indianapolis. And kids with special needs are going to be racing soapbox down that the Soapbox Hill there. And there's going to be a few celebrities there, including the real Ronald McDonald, I've been told.
So go see Dan and Ron over at the, what was the name of it again, one more time?
I'm not sure what the name is, but it's the Soapbox Derby race from 9:30 to 2 p.m. on Saturday at the Wilbershaw Memorial Soapbox Derby Hill on 30th and Cold Spring Road.
So check that out. And I think that'll just about wrap it up here on the Planet IRL podcast. I want to thank all three of my hosts this week, Paul Dalby, Jeremy Scott, and a special thanks to Dan Clark for taking time out of his schedule to join us. And I want to thank all of you, the listeners and the readers, for supporting us and keeping us going here. Stay tuned. Our next show will be a pre-Homestead edition where we will preview the finale and our picks for the race. So I hope you've enjoyed the show, and thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see ya.